Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of Get Wrecked, the only podcast anywhere in the world where two buds take turns recommending and reviewing some of their favorite pop culture hits, hidden gems, and oddities. I'm, of course, your host and resident scary boy Thor, joined today, as always, by my friend and co-host. Welcome to this place. He'll show you everything with arms wide open. It's Micah.
You went with Creed.
It's religious themed.
Oh my God, that was okay. Great. I love it.
All right. For a second, I thought you were doing Bo Burnham's Welcome to the Internet.
I feel like that could also, because he kind of morphs into a demon during that song.
Yeah. I actually love that song.
That whole like special is really cool.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Hey, Thor, we've got a guest today.
We do. Today, we're being joined by Zach IMDZ Bolton to tell us who he plans on voting for in the 2024 election. Zach, what's up? Go ahead.
No one.
Are you saying you're not going to do your patriotic duty and vote for Cthulhu?
And choose between the lesser of two evils?
Zach is kidding. Before we started recording, he told me he was voting for, and let's just say, real patriot, folks.
Ralph Nader's still on the ticket, right?
He's a real patriot.
Is Ross Perot still available?
Which one of them wanted to ban microwaves? I think it was Ross Perot.
I don't know. No, I'm kidding. Zach's actually here to rank all the races from best to worst. So, Zach, go ahead.
Daytona 500, Talladega, Watkins Glen. I'm on the right track, right?
Yep.
Brickyard.
I see what you did there. Track.
He's so quick on his feet. I try, when we have guests, I've started trying to like throw them off kilter, and you have successfully dodged both my attempts.
Yeah, was pretty
to
good.
Get you caught off
that
guard.
Was pretty good. When we have a guest and we start the intro, I just go hi, and then I just lean back a little bit.
And wait, Thor's got this
coming. Yeah. He'll throw him off there.
Yeah.
Off guard.
It has been a little while, Thor. We've taken a little bit of a hiatus.
Yes. Yep. So Terminator timeline, by the time you guys have heard this, we'll already have been back, but we're recording this before we record that episode where we first came back.
That is true. Yeah. It just lined up. We had this big thing going on. We were going to do a whole month of spooky October. And then we were like, hey, let's take October off.
Yeah.
Because our schedules were just too wild.
Well, and when I think spooky, I definitely think of you, Micah.
Well, yeah, it would have not been a fun month for me.
Yeah. But
so because really it was mostly me. I was like, I just have too much going on with work and life stuff right now. It's like, I need to just kind of take a break. And it was the month of October coming up where we were like, we're just going to do all horror, spooky Halloween themed stuff. And Micah was like, yeah, that sounds fine. No problem.
Sure,
no pushback at all.
Because last year with Hereditary worked so well.
Yeah. Was that a year ago?
I'm pretty sure that was last year.
I think that was our Halloween episode last year, yeah.
All right. Well, this, I guess, is going to be our Halloween episode. It might be a little late, but you know what?
Yeah, a couple weeks late. It's
all
right.
Have Halloween in November. You can praise the Demon Lord in November, too. I'm sure he doesn't care.
And really, this is an Easter story.
No, it is not.
Sure it is.
No, it is not.
Hey, spooky doesn't necessarily have to take place during Halloween.
You're correct. It does not. It does take place in, like, the timeline of the year, the calendar year of Easter. So if you want to call it an Easter story because of that,
yeah, it's an
sure.
Yeah, it's an Easter story for sure.
Okay. Nope.
Yeah, you know, there's the greatest story ever told, and then there's Midnight Mass. I mean, they go hand in hand with Easter, right?
Sure. Yeah, one of them does.
How does Star Wars go hand in hand with
You know
Midnight
what's funny?
Mass?
I was going to make that exact joke. I was going to be like, yeah, but The Empire Strikes Back doesn't have much to do with the resurrection of Jesus.
I'm glad we're on the same.
Oh, my gosh. So we're going to talk about Midnight Mass today. That was Bolton's suggestion. This was going to be our crescendo of the Halloween spooky season. But instead of that, we're just making this the only thing for the spooky season.
It is the low point,
and also,
the high point, and everything in between.
And also 2 weeks after the spooky season.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're just making you reminisce of the good old days. When, you know, they had inflatable skeletons and pumpkins in the lawn. I am not. Full disclosure, folks, I don't know if this is apparent or not, but Halloween's not for me. Not a fan at all. So, yeah, we'll let's get into Midnight Mass.
Hey, folks, make sure to stay up to date on all the latest episodes by following us at Get Wrecked Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Or if you have any recommendations you'd like to hear us review on the show, you can contact us directly via email. Or, I don't know, maybe you just want to send us some feet pics. You creep, I don't know what you're into. I don't care. We'll review those too. What do you think of that, huh? In any case, all your requests, feedback, and general criticism of the straight white patriarchy can be sent to getwreckedpod@gmail.com. That's GITRECDPOD@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Alrighty, folks, so today we are discussing Midnight Mass, a Netflix original miniseries from Zach, what's this, the director's name?
Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan, who has done a number of these like spooky series for Netflix. He did Fall House of Usher, Haunting at Hill House.
Which is also phenomenal if you guys want another watch.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that on this show before without, like, we haven't actually watched it yet. But yeah, Fall House of Usher was cool. Haunting of Hill House, which I think is really good.
Hill House, and Bly Manor, he's done a few movies.
Yeah, I don't really like horror. I'm kind of like, Zach, you love horror.
Yeah, this is my time of year. This is my thing.
Micah hates horror.
I know. I don't know how we ever became friends.
And I'm kind of like right and I'm like right in the middle where I kind of like, I'm very particular about a lot of it. I don't care for, and I'm kind of particular.
That's,
but I really like a lot of what Mike Flanagan does. Most of those shows I at the very least enjoyed, if not like really enjoyed. So it takes place on this small island off like the northeast coast called like Crockett Island.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Crockett.
It's like an isolated community. And then they start experiencing some miraculous events. A girl who was in a wheelchair starts walking.
An old lady starts to reverse age.
An old lady gets younger.
Guy's back problems start to disappear, and a woman's eyesight starts to return.
Yeah, it all starts with this kind of, their old priest who had been on this island for many years went on a trip, and a new priest comes to replace him and says, yeah, well, on his way back, he got sick, so he's on the mainland getting better. And then all these miraculous things start happening, and everybody thinks, man, this is pretty good. This is, you know, it's a very Catholic community, and they're like, man, we're finally seeing the word of God, really. This place has really needed it. And the story primarily follows Riley, who is kind of at the lowest point of his life. He killed a girl in a car, like a drunken car accident, and he's just gotten out of prison, has to go back to living at home with his parents and going to church on the weekends. And and so you start to see all these miraculous things, but then you start to realize very quickly there's a dark side to what's going on. So with that, boys, where do we want to start with this thing?
Bolton, I think we bring you in. What's the thought process behind recommending this one? I presume it's because you like it.
I do like this. And may I say, this was not solely me. This was me and Thor combined. A couple years ago at a party, this just randomly got brought up, and Thor and I just kind of locked eyes across the room like, yes, Midnight Mass. And we've kind of been talking about it ever since, and we've been trying to get you to watch it since then. I mean, this came out in 2021.
You have bugged me a couple of times to watch this.
I'm pretty sure it was that year. So, I mean, we've been bugging you for 3 years to watch this.
Has it been 3 years?
Yeah.
Man.
And honestly, this is one of those where I was like, there's a lot of this that I think Michael would like. But then, like, the last two episodes, I'm pretty sure he will fucking hate. Which was always kind of like, the whole time I was watching it, I probably watched it before we started doing the show, but okay. This was definitely one that's been on my list for a long time, just waiting for the right time. So Bolton just kind of, I was dragging my feet. I probably never would have got around to it. So Bolton, thank you for getting us there.
I'm not even sure how it came up. We were just hanging out one night, Micah, and I was like, oh, Midnight Mass. And you're like, oh, you know, I should ask Thor if he wants to record this. And then just kind of, you know, snowballed from there. But may I say, you guys threw me for a loop, because we discussed that like 2 months ago, and I rewatched it the next week.
Yeah. Well, that was on you. That, Bolton. That,
well, I mean, I thought it was going to be something that happened relatively quick. So now we're here 2 months later. So it's not as fresh in my mind as I would have liked it to be.
Yeah.
But I did rewatch it this year, so I will... Do my best.
It's also because you start getting ready for Halloween by watching horror movies in August. That's when your lead up to Halloween starts.
Like it's not 2 months ahead.
Here's the thing, though. So Shark Week happens in August. Okay. So I will start watching like Jaws because Jaws is a perfect companion to Shark Week. So it's like a perfect lead in, you know. And I would say to the colder months, but, you know, it's 80 degrees outside right now. So not really.
I'm just impressed that you watch Shark Week. Is Shark Week still a thing?
It is. It's not. It's kind of just on for background noise. It's not like I'm sitting down going, "Oh my god!"
One of the guys from Jackass, like one of the new guys when they did the movie recently.
Yeah.
Like that. The year that most recent Jackass movie came out,
I think that was just last year. They
pulled a bunch of new cast members in, kind of like. And then one of those guys, they were doing Shark Week and got like his arm bitten off.
Oh my god! Really?
Yeah.
Like lost his arm?
They had a whole Jackass meets Shark Week episode,
and it turned out exactly how you would expect it would turn out.
No.
The dude lost his arm doing a Jackass stunt. The guy named Poopies, that's his name. Poopies got his arm bitten off by a shark.
Some things just write themselves. I feel like that's wild. All right, well, I'm gonna have to look that up. Did they like? It must not have happened on television. Then they have to have edited.
I don't think they showed it.
Yeah, I want to say it was one of those things where they're like, "Oh my god, we have an emergency! Call people in!" And then they like cut away.
But was it a Jackass thing? Like, were they doing their stupid Jackass routine and it was giggle, giggle, and then, like, see you later?
I can't even remember what the stunt was at this point, but, you know, they're doing dumb things. I mean, in the original movie, they jumped into the water with whale sharks and put shrimp in their crotch.
That's true, they did do that.
I mean, it's not like they haven't messed with sharks before.
Yeah, it's just wild to think, I mean...
Yeah, well, Shark Week does that. They, like, partner with celebrities, and you know what I mean? They've done it with, like, the guys... from like different TV shows and stuff like that. And so this time it was Jackass. And so obviously they're like, you got to push the limits when it's Jackass and do crazy stunts.
Sure.
Didn't work out so good, I guess.
I guess. I'll bet it did for the ratings, though. Bet it did for the ratings. All right. Yeah. Well, okay. Midnight Mass.
Midnight Mass. Yeah. Yeah.
Midnight Mass. So I remember seeing the picture of this on Netflix and thinking, from the poster or the little graphic on Netflix, that the priest looked like Jake Gyllenhaal in the picture. And in the show, he does not at all look like Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, Hamish Linklater does not really
not at all. Like Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't know, Thor, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that cover art for sure, because his hair is like really slicked back, and it's definitely like a stylized like picture of him there.
Yeah.
So I see why he looked like Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. Yeah, but watching it, I'm like, oh, this guy doesn't look like him at all. Yeah. This was an interesting movie, show, miniseries. This was an interesting miniseries. I have many thoughts.
Well, please.
Let's start with like the first couple episodes, like the first two episodes when what's going on is just first kind of unfolding. You're getting introduced to the characters. That's where you kind of get Riley comes home. He starts hanging out with Aaron again. The father, Paul, shows up.
Yeah. Are we going to throw a spoiler, folks, guys? We're going to talk about all of this.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've been warned. Yeah, I think that the first two episodes were fine. I've got a really long-standing beef with movies and TV shows and pop culture and how they represent anybody who is a religious figure specifically dealing with Christianity. I've got a real big beef with it, and I was really hoping that this show might squash some of that beef. I was really hoping that that would be the case, because initially... for the first two episodes, I think that I really enjoyed the priest, who's Father Paul.
He's incredible, yeah.
So, first of all, the acting in this show, fantastic. I think that the acting is absolutely amazing. I think that the cast was just really, really, really good. I think visually, this is a very cool show. But but I really am just sick and tired of Ush just like, oh, there's a religious figure. He's going to be more flawed than everybody else on the fucking island. I just knew that from the get-go, and I didn't want it to be true. Because I was hoping maybe somebody could just, you know, portray a religious figure not in a bad light. But nope, can't do it. And I get that it's a horror movie.
Well, okay, go on.
He was 100% portrayed in a bad light. Initially, maybe not, all right? But that, I felt like it was trying to swindle me. Like, from the get-go. I felt like they were trying to get me to like this guy. And I kind of did. I kind of do.
I think everybody did.
All right? But I got frustrated. I got frustrated with it. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay, I see where you're coming from with that, but I think the exact opposite, though. As far as like, it does show him as a flawed person,
mm-hmm.
but I think ultimately he is a good character. Everything he did was out of like good, and he kind of got fooled a little bit. He got, because basically the thing, we'll skip ahead a little bit. He gets chomped on by a demon vampire thing,
yeah.
basically, and he mistakes it for an angel. That's,
yeah, yep. he's a senile old man lost in a desert, and mm-hmm. he wanders into a cave.
Yeah, sure.
And I think, you know what I mean? And there's a lot, like, towards, especially the last episode, he ends up feeling great remorse for everything that happens because of his decisions.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. It only took the entire fucking town being burned to the ground. Like, oh, actually, maybe that was a mistake. Maybe that was a mistake. You know, when I was eating the town drunk's head, no, not a mistake. Okay. Whatever, that's God's will. Well, but actually, when we burn down the village, okay, maybe we're going a bit too far.
No,
but that wasn't really on him, though.
It was on him when he wakes up and he goes, oh, this is too much.
Is it really his fault compared to Bev's, though?
She is absolutely a culprit. 100%.
Oh, yeah. Bev's like one of the best villains I've ever seen on screen.
But again, she's another religious figure who's shown in a very negative light.
I think it's more showing that there are people out there, and I'm not trying to shit on religion or anything, but there are fanatics out there who do take things way too far. She thinks that she is above and beyond everybody else on that island.
I would agree.
I mean, she showed that by, you know, the subplot where she basically stole all the town's money.
Yeah.
I think, so for me, I feel like it kind of shows, like, because, you know, you can't separate the religious, like, conversation from this just because of the nature of everything. It's so deeply entwined.
Yeah.
But I think this show does a great job of showing the best parts of religion as well as the worst parts.
What would be the best parts that it shows?
The comfort. It gives some of the people, the want to do good, the want to help.
Okay.
I think
oftentimes those tropey things of like, oh, here's the priest, he's going to end up being the bad guy. It's because they secretly want power. They secretly want to, or you know what I mean? Or they think they're better than everybody. And you kind of see that in Bev Keen for sure.
Sure.
But with Father Paul, it's genuinely like I want to make people better. I want to help them. It ends up going fully off the rails. Terrible decision on his part. Like, no question there. But and he lets himself get caught up in his own bullshit a little bit. Truly. 100%. But I think he's still a sympathetic character and a character I really like, because it's like he wanted it so much to be true that what he was doing was helping everybody. He put the blinders on and ignored all the bad of it, but it came from like a good place.
So I think if it weren't for the last episode, I might agree with you on that.
Okay.
But with the last episode, let me get to who was the the old lady who had, I don't know if she had dementia or She was very clearly ill.
Are you looking for the character name?
Yeah, her daughter was Sarah Gunning.
Mildred.
Mildred, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, real quick, before my biggest problem with this show is right from the very first time you're introduced to Mildred, you're like, oh, this is obviously a young, beautiful woman in not that great, like, aged up makeup.
I did think that as
like,
well.
That's my biggest beef with the show is now watching it a second time, knowing... I thought it the first time, and then watching it the second time, I'm like, it's so like so obviously a young, beautiful woman tried to be aged
would,
up.
Would it have changed your opinion if they started off with an actual older actress and then by the end
I would have preferred they did that with Father Paul in. when he was still John. What's his real name? John
Pewitt.
Pewitt. Yeah, when he was I'm almost certain the John Pewitt like old. Old John Pewitt and Father Paul are two different actors. I could be wrong. That or they did a much better job on his makeup.
I think it's still all Hamish Linklater played them both.
Okay. But in any case, like, that's my biggest problem with the show is like.
So, yeah, I saw that. I noticed that as well. And my immediate thought was, why did they just pick a younger woman to play an older woman? Why didn't they just get an older woman to play the role? And then as the story progressed, I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing.
Yeah.
I see. They're going to de-age her. So.
And really, the whole thing was because Father Paul loved her. He just wanted her to be young again.
Yeah, really, that's what you're missing, Micah, is this whole show, really, it's just a love story.
Okay, so.
I mean, you're not wrong.
In a couple of ways. I mean,
that leads me to what my biggest issue about this character, the father, is.
Okay.
Because in the very last episode, he says, he's like, you know, I could say that I did it for the town. I could say that I did it for, you know, to spread the word of God, but I did it for you. I did it for you and for Sarah. All right? Because Sarah, the town doctor, you find out is his daughter.
Yeah.
That he had out of wedlock. So he had an affair and with this woman. And then he came and essentially...
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah, and so he admits that he brings this vampire creature to town so that he could basically have done to her what was done to him so that they could have a second chance together.
Yeah.
And he admits that that's the reason that he did it.
Okay, yeah, I guess I did forget that part. Yeah, that is...
Also, they never say vampire, so...
They definitely don't say vampire, right? But it's like... What else would it be?
Yeah, it's an angel.
I like the fact that they never say vampire.
I do too.
I think
yeah.
It adds the mystique of it.
And like, I enjoyed a lot of this movie, but there are things that really bother me when you try to like take the dichotomy of the holy and pair it with the unholy and then meld it together, because things inevitably just don't make sense to me as far as how a congregation would just 100% be fooled with everything that's going on.
Miracles.
What's that?
The miracles.
Yeah.
So there is that, but then there is the sheriff who is religious, but he's not a Christian.
Christian. Which I love. Christian. I really like the sheriff character.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's a good character.
Sharif.
So like he's a religious character that is able to see through the bullshit because he's not a Christian.
Yeah.
Right. And then who else can see through the bullshit? Oh, that's right. The atheist can see through the bullshit.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so my biggest, and again, the show on its surface, honestly, was fine. It was fine. But it's really hard for me to get around the fact that the only people who were like not swindled is the lesbian doctor, the atheist, the Muslim. Like, those are the people who weren't swayed.
Okay, fair criticism, yeah.
All right?
Definitely
so,
fair criticism.
Like, all the Christians were dumb enough to get, you know, to fall for this shit. All right? And like, whatever, I get it,
well,
it's a
and
show.
Like, not specifically Catholics.
Catholics,
that is
if they
true.
Were Protestants, they would have seen through that bullshit. I'm pretty confident
would've.
Of that.
Yeah, that's true. That's
suck
true.
It, Catholic Church.
So, like, whatever, that's my high horse. All right. I'll step off of that. Actually, no, I'm not going to step off yet. Another thing that really bothers me.
Oh, this is why I love recommending religious stuff.
Really bothers me is when they're like, oh yeah, and they start quoting Bible verses like they're actually quoting scripture. It's not fucking scripture. These biblical texts that they're reciting don't exist. The things that the crazy lady was saying, all right, is not in the book of Revelation.
That's why she's crazy.
That does bum me out. That bums me out.
It irritates the hell out of me because they're like, make it seem all like spiritual and religious. And I will tell you
that. And I thought that honestly watching it, I was like, that doesn't seem right. Like genuinely without. So that does bug me.
So like I'll say half of it was in there. Like I'll probably like half of it is scripture that actually exists. But then they go and make stuff up. And then bring it in to, like, fit the narrative of the story. And I get that it's a narrative. And I get that they're not trying to, like, I get that it's a holy thing or a horror thing. And they're trying to, like, weave a tale and tell a story. I get it. But if you're going to do it for, like, if you're going to pull actual scripture, then just pull actual scripture.
Yeah.
Like, don't make stuff up to make, the book of Revelation has some wild shit in it. Well, absolutely. Right? You don't have to, like, make it up.
Well, yeah, and absolutely. And, like, once, like you said, the cast is incredible. I think there are some of my favorite monologues of all time. Like Patrick Flanagan does this great thing of he writes really great monologues. I really enjoy his dialogue. That's probably my favorite part about this show is it feels like a play a lot of times because you have these just long monologues
the whole
characters.
The whole conversation with Aaron and Riley about what happens when you die, and they're like,
it's so sad and beautiful.
Oh, it's such like a hauntingly beautiful like scene. And like at the end when Aaron's just kind of like laying there and she's like slowly fading, like it, you know, it shows like what she thinks happens, how like she just, you know, slowly becomes part of the earth and, you know, fades away into the universe and all is one and everything is peace, like that. Like, it's so good. But I had a moment that I wanted to... just going back to your whole, like, the town being duped thing. And this is just how I looked at it.
Yeah.
So, at the beginning of the show, we clearly see that the town is not devout. Not that many people attend church.
Yeah.
So, when Bev just starts spouting shit off... The town, who might not know their shit because they only show up to church on Easter and Christmas and now are only showing up because there's miracles, start looking at the woman who basically lives in the church and acts like she knows her shit. So when she just starts spouting off all this crazy shit, they're like, oh, maybe that is, we don't know. It's not like we go to church every Sunday. You know, we're not firm believers.
Sure. I could see that. But then, for most of the case, yes, I would say yeah. And I could even see the girl who was paralyzed, Lisa Scarborough.
Yeah.
That's the character. The actress was Inara Simone. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So, like, I could see that family because they were regular attendees.
Yeah, they were, like, the only real regulars.
Yeah. So, with them, I could see them being duped because their daughter literally started walking, right? Like that's pretty miraculous.
Yeah.
And they don't have the context of what's happening behind the scenes. So that I can fully understand. I don't know about the parents though of Riley Flynn. Like they're just regular attendees that go and they get pretty duped as well.
Well, they start experiencing the miracles and we see it for them firsthand more compared to the other ones.
Sure.
The mom starts getting her vision back. The dad's back starts getting better. They start getting a little life in them. Their romance is rekindled a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. And even them though, at the end,
like you're in your 60s, you start banging again. You're like, I'll believe whatever you tell me, dog. I don't care. That's how I,
just seemed like everybody who ultimately was like, no, this is wrong, had some type of predisposition to not buy it in the first place.
Yeah.
So even the parents, because when Riley ends up offing himself by looking at the sun.
Dude, so cool.
Right? It was a pretty cool scene, right? Like the parents, well, the dad specifically goes and confronts the pastor about it because he's like, this is strange. Like he keeps putting you in the middle of it. So, like, even them, when they get turned into vampire, not vampires, and then they decide not to just go pillage. They've got this predisposition to not follow the congregation anyway, because they think that something, or at least they're suspicious that something is amiss with the pastor.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
I think it also helps that the mom hates Bev.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I think everybody does. She poisons dogs. She's the worst.
Yeah, yeah,
she's
Bev's
horrible.
So bad. Oh,
yeah. So
she's
that's,
the worst.
That's my high horse. I'm getting down now. I'm okay. Stepping down from the high horse. Those are like my biggest issues with the show.
I okay. love recommending cool. religious things okay, to Micah it? For this. Next year, I'm going to recommend The Exorcist, and we're just going to watch him destroy it for 2 hours.
So, what do you think about the Father Paul and Riley's relationship and like their dynamic?
I think that it's a pretty cool dynamic. All in all, I think it's a pretty cool dynamic. All in all, I liked most of Father Paul. I liked a lot of what, like everything on the surface of what Father Paul was doing, I really, really liked.
This is my second watch through, and this is one of those, it's really fun watching it through a second time once you know where it all goes. The second episode is the first time Riley goes to an AA meeting with Father Paul.
Does it really happen that quick?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of
and,
how it does.
There is this moment where Riley is explained, like, you don't realize it. You don't realize how much foreshadowing there is in this show until you watch it a second time. As well as there's this incredible, once again, really great monologue by Riley where he's kind of talking about alcoholism, and he's talking about how it's like it's a different person and it's this like urge.
Oh, yeah.
And
sure.
You're struggling to control it, and you wake up and you're like, that was a different person, but it was me. But it's like it feels like a different person. And there's this whole time that like, those AA meetings are also for Father Paul, but it's not alcohol that he's trying to refrain from. It's eating people and drinking their blood that he's trying to. That's sure. That's the monkey on his back, you know, just trying to. So I really liked watching this a second time.
That is a pretty
for some of the,
yeah,
the
that is a pretty
like,
cool foreshadowing.
Riley's recovery is also kind of like a metaphor for Father Paul's like Riley not trying to drink is. It's kind of like this duality, like they're parallel stories. They're both kind of going through the same thing.
There was something too that I thought was kind of neat. Is that the same episode where they had like the crock pot picnic, like the town picnic?
Yeah, I think that was episode two.
Right around, yeah. So, because that all between episode one and two.
Yeah.
Because episode two is where you get the actual story of what happened to Father Paul. That's the first time you see the demon vampire.
Oh, yeah, that happens like right at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the crockpot luck and that first meeting he has, that's all in those first two episodes.
Okay. So something that I did like near the end of the series, I remembered back to that episode because the doctor was having her date and they looked over and Father Paul was looking at Sarah, the mm-hmm. doctor. And she's like, you know, Father Pewitt looked at me the exact same way. And I always just thought like they know that I'm a lesbian type of thing. And I thought that was a really cool thing, that there was like a little mini story there, because when at the end of the series, then you realize that, oh, one, Father Pewitt is this Father John.
Uh-huh.
And two, he was looking at her because that's his daughter.
Exactly,
and he's got to keep the secret. Mm. Right. So like that was pretty cool. That was a little cool, mini, tiny story.
Well, yeah, because he's kind of getting to watch her grow up again for the second time, but he's getting to do it with a queer mind now.
Sure.
Okay. And so, and I know we already talked about this a little bit. You didn't love that. Like you didn't like at the end, you're like, I could agree with what I had said. You could agree with what I had said earlier, except for the fact the whole reason he brought this thing back was for his lost love and her daughter. I personally, probably one of my least favorite parts of this story, aside from the bad de-aging of the late, aside from that, is I didn't love that was his like reason. I didn't love that they made him like, I don't feel like it added a ton to the story. The fact that he was in love with that lady, yeah, and then that was secretly his daughter.
Sure.
It was almost like a, I don't know. It's like they are trying to give him, I mean, you see it. That's really, it was like a plot device, mm-hmm, as opposed to a lot of the characters feel really grounded in reality, genuinely. Like maybe like Bev Keen, she's a little bit, it's a little bit character-y almost. Like it's,
she's a great character
to an extreme.
Yeah.
But a lot of them feel fairly grounded in reality. Like Riley and, got Aaron.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they feel like real people. A lot of the people do. Riley's dad, I love him.
Yeah, he was really good.
He feels like a Fox News dad. You know what I mean? Just like an old, like just a good dad. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Where
blue collar,
where literally
boat.
The yeah. biggest, the hardest thing for him in his entire life is saying I'm sorry to his son.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I love those scenes. And so all of it felt really, I don't know, like grounded in like these characters. But that, I don't know, just the whole that this, I was secretly in love with her this whole time and we had a kid and it was a secret and we,
yeah,
it all felt like it was just too neat, like them just trying to tie up a reason as to why.
I think it helped me comprehend why he was so devout on going to her house to give her mass every day.
Sure. That makes sense. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I can understand that. I think for me, I would have appreciated that. I would have actually really liked Father Paul if once he starts going through it and he can't walk out in the sun anymore, like once that moment happens, if he would have realized, oh,
it's like you've like, never fucking read a book or yeah. seen a movie ever. Like, you're yeah. obviously like, a vampire, bro.
Like, well, I think that kind of adds to the mythos because, like I said, they never say vampire. So it's almost like they're living in a world where these stories don't actually exist.
That's true. Yeah, that could be the case.
Perhaps that's why the scripture is different.
Yeah, you could.
Ooh, yeah, Twilight Zone. I mean, what a twist!
Yeah. But I think if he at that point would have been like, okay, something is amiss. This is clearly not what I thought it was. And then he would have helped start to turn the tide. I think I would have actually really liked that character.
Yeah,
because that I could see him like being old, dementia, taking the miracle for like a miracle of what it was, and then realizing his flaws or realizing how he was swayed and shifting. I think that I yeah. would have actually grown to respect
how, quite how a much bit. More sense. Honestly, how much more sense does it make for his character if in those like the kind of end of episode six, beginning of when they're doing the midnight mass,
yeah,
when he's like, you know what, the demon shows up and then he realizes like, no, this isn't right.
Yeah.
And then he decides to say, hey, no, this isn't right. And then Bev Keen shoots him.
Yeah. You know, that I've been all about.
I feel like that makes so much more sense. Like character, like as far as if you want to portray him, because I'll be honest, I kind of wanted to see him in that light. But now that you point out the fact that really his whole reason for doing this was selfish.
Yeah.
It's like, you just kind of destroyed my picture of it, and I'm bummed. So now I'm like, man, I really wish he would have had a change of heart before that.
Yeah. Because
fuck.
Because I feel like
you've ruined the show for me, Mike.
I'm sorry. That's what I do, I guess. Oh, and Bolton, are you ready for this?
Sure.
I'm just going to throw this out here. I'm looking at the wiki, folks.
Okay.
All right. Which this is just making me smile a little bit.
Are you getting ready to like try to prove me wrong on something?
No. I'm just thinking that this
just
is
prove
funny.
Himself right. I would assume
this is funny to me.
It's a pat on the back.
It's not even that. It's not even that.
Okay.
All right. I do that enough. So I'm at the Midnight Mass wiki, and it's got a diagram of all the characters. And so then they've got the angel, right? So I click on the angel to, you know, look a little bit about what's going on, and then the side panel where it gives like all the information about the angel. I just want to read some of this. Okay, the angel, biographical information, species, vampire, status, deceased, parentheses, most likely.
He's dead.
He's 100%.
He's 100% dead. There's no yeah. reason that Lisa would all, you
Why
know.
Does he have a biography? It's a fictional character. What the fuck?
Wikis, you know, just go off the rails sometimes. People can do whatever they want.
Okay.
But then it goes,
fair enough, yeah.
Occupation, vampire. And also false prophet. So like,
why couldn't they put vampire like altar boy?
Yeah. How much does that pay? I wonder. Like,
how much does it pay?
Like, is it occupation? I'm a vampire. I make like, you know, 10 figures.
Well, you get paid in blood. Yeah, you get paid in ounces.
That's true. Yeah. Cause of death, combustion. Again, most likely. And then it's got like relatives. Father Paul. Puppet.
What the hell?
So like, I don't know. It's just funny to me that they're putting all this in there.
Yeah, that's cool. Other things, Riley and Aaron's relationship.
I genuinely really liked that.
Yes.
Yeah, the
I kind of fell in love with her.
The childhood kind of starstruck lovers that didn't quite pan out. They went on their own separate path, and you know, they just their paths veered way far out and then came back in and, you know,
yeah,
re-entwined at Crockett.
Yeah, it's there's really, I don't know, it's tough to say that there's any main character in the show. I think it Riley's kind of your jumping off point, and then I mean he dies at the end of episode 4.
I was surprised to see that.
Yeah, that threw me for a loop the first time I watched it.
Can I tell you, me and Kendra, so we finished it episode 4 this morning. We had started watching it last night, finished it this morning.
Okay.
And we just weren't paying attention. So the part where he bursts into flames, Dean was just like watching the TV, and I had to like grab his eyes and be like, no, don't watch this.
We've all had those moments.
Yeah. But then it cuts to the credits and it's just her screaming.
Yeah.
Dude, one of the best endings. It's right up there with the Red Wedding as far as like,
it was a pretty good one. It was a good end of an episode.
Incredible way to end an
episode. Because there's no like sound, there's no like tune or anything playing. It's just like
her wailing in pain.
The natural sound. And you hear the water from the waves hitting up against the boat and like,
yeah. I love that episode. I love that scene where he's like, remember when you were 16 and you were like, just come out to the lake with me. And
yeah. Because for a second, I was thinking, this dude's going to turn her. Like, for a second, I was thinking that. And I do really like the connection to that end scene and then his dream where he's been on the boat in, like, just in the water.
Yeah. Once again, that foreshadowing that's taking place from the very beginning of the show.
Yeah, I did really like that, especially because he spent the night with Aaron. That's her name, right? Aaron.
Yeah, Aaron. Yeah.
So he spent the night there and he had that dream again, but this time Aaron was there. So I thought that was kind of cool. Like with that, with his final time having that dream, like she was on the boat with him.
Yeah. Well, and also like, cause the whole time he's also having these dreams of this girl, of her just laying there.
Yeah. What are
bloody,
your thoughts on
with
this?
The lights flashing in it. And then, so when he finally like, you know, dies there, when the sun comes up in his brain, she's like hugging him and basically embracing him, and with this like, it has this body language and feeling of like forgiveness.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was
basically
thinking about.
And then it just cuts to her screaming face as he's like fucking melting into ash.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I loved that. Like, it's just because that was really, say what you will about him being atheist or being like having lost, I don't even think atheist, I think somebody who lost his faith, you know, and
sure,
just
I mean,
struggling with that.
I don't care that he's an atheist. I think he's a very well written character.
Yeah No, absolutely, but like that's the thing, that's kind of his whole character arc is everything, his quest for recovery. It's not because like, oh, you went to jail and you have to get, it was because he genuinely feels like remorse for killing, for like snuffing out an innocent life.
Sure.
Right. So like this part, that it's kind of like him forgiving himself, you know?
Do you feel like they kind of swindled you with the story for the first couple of episodes?
In what way?
In that there really wasn't a lot going on in the main plot for those first couple of episodes.
The first two episodes are just character development, really.
Yeah.
And I think there's enough to like keep you going, because like there is all this character development, but then like at the end of, was it episode 2 where the guy goes into the house and like he gets slaughtered? And was it the end of episode 1 with all the cats?
Yeah, so the end of episode one, I think it was the cats.
Mm-hmm.
And then in episode two, the dog is killed.
No, and that that young guy goes and that young guy's walking
down
the street.
The dog is killed in episode two, but at the end of the episode,
the pot dealer.
Yeah, the pot dealer is walking past like that, like rundown house, and he hears the noise and goes inside and gets.
Oh yeah, what an eerie scene that was, and also how dumb is this guy? All right, he's like, "Who's in there?" And then he just goes, "Who's in there?" I'm like, "Oh, let's go check it out.
Yeah, like, let's go see what's going on.
The dangers of drugs, kids."
Yeah. But I felt like they added and also having that immediate, like, anytime that Riley closed his eyes, he saw the dead girl. And really, it was very weird. It's weird to say this, but it was actually very pretty. I really liked how her portrayal. This is going to sound really weird, but I really liked how the portrayal of her had like all the shattered glass in her face. Uh-huh. And then the cop lights were reflecting kind of like making this sparkly.
I 100%
like, where you're going. The imagery was really, really.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. There's this big running theme of like lights and stars.
Yeah.
And like that whole, I feel like, what Flanagan?
Mike Flanagan,
he's got a real hard on for light.
The directing, I think, was really good.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I really did like the directing. But with the first two episodes, it was, I think maybe swindle's not the right word, but it was definitely trying to be ambiguous in like
where the story was going.
Yeah, there's something amiss, but we're not going to let you know what yet type of thing. Because I was thinking that it had to do with animals for the first like two episodes. Because all the cats ended up dead, and then the dog ended up dying, and then they saw, like, the boys went to the uppers in the very first episode and saw the eyes, so I thought there was, I don't know, like a chupacabra or something.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
Eating the goats.
Yeah, I could see that. They definitely, it does a good job of the first couple episodes. It leaves you kind of thinking, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But once it reveals it, then you're like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Maybe it could have been revealed a little bit later. I don't know. But it definitely feels like they're trying to throw you off the scent of exactly what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, those are my thoughts. I don't know. I don't know how much more I have to say about this. I'm going to be honest.
Let's see. Another part I don't like. I'll tell you another thing I don't like. I really do like this, but there's a couple things that just bug me. Okay, so Riley gets turned, and then immediately he can't step out into the sun. Father Paul gets turned, and he gets to spend weeks. He flies back from Jerusalem. He's out at the crockpot luck. He's walking around in the sun.
Oh, sure.
So why is it that he's good? Because Riley got turned the exact same way Father Paul did. So why is it that he could walk in the sun for the first couple weeks, but Riley couldn't immediately?
My thought is just that Flanagan plays with the lore of vampires a lot for this show.
Sure.
And there has been other movies that have kind of messed with timeline for turning.
He was the Daywalker. He was Blade.
But there's some where I think it's, did you ever see From Dusk Till Dawn with George Clooney?
What a movie.
Yeah. And Quentin Tarantino. I saw the series
That movie does the same thing because Harvey Keitel gets bitten pretty early in that movie when shit starts to hit the fan. But he's like the last one to turn. Whereas there's another guy in the movie who gets bitten and he turns almost immediately.
Okay.
So
maybe it's Father Paul's like connection to God and his spirit that's like fighting off.
It could be
that off longer.
For a second, I was thinking maybe it had to do with something about Riley hasn't fed yet, but that wouldn't really make sense. But.
No, maybe it's because Father Paul found the demon when it was very weak. You know, it had been trapped under a sand dune for. Yeah. A thousand or however many thousands of years.
But I mean, Flanagan plays with the war. I mean, because realistically, as soon as the vampire walked into the church, it should have burst into flames.
Sure, there is that.
Why is that?
Because
it's a church.
Well, vampires can't really stand hallowed ground. And that's when they are at their weakest and most vulnerable.
Okay.
And they pretty much hate anything to do with religion.
Gotcha.
So the fact that he basically makes this vampire an altar boy and turns that lore on its head.
Dude, I do kind of love that scene though when he just
that, can I say the whole like that whole sequence where he brings it out and like the son like volunteers, what's the sheriff's son's name? I keep wanting to call him to Jafar, and I know that's so wrong.
Yeah, his name's Aladdin, yeah.
Ali. It's Ali. So I'm not that far off. Come on. But Ali, like, you know, he's a character because he's one that's
his
also
character
like,
doesn't make sense at all, yeah.
Well, no, because, like, he's brought up in this Muslim household by, mm-hmm. you know, this dad who seems very devout in his faith, but his friends are Christian, and, you know, he wants to kind of experience...
Christian.
And and he's the first one to volunteer, really, for this, you know, sacred rite in this church at midnight mass. And I forget where I was going with my thought.
The changing of the lore of the vampire.
Yeah.
And the whole sequence of that.
Oh, that whole sequence where, like, starting from that to, like, when they leave the church and everything and there's the bloodbath. That whole sequence, not much scares me, and I think it's because I'm desensitized from watching so much horror.
Go figure.
That whole sequence just literally terrified the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And I think it has more to do with how quickly everybody made up their mind that they were going to do it compared to the bloodshed and, you know, the gore and everything like that. But how quickly, like, they saw, you know, like the handyman got turned, the one who was like the disciple.
Surge?
Yeah, it's something like that.
Gosh, what is it?
It is something like Surge or something like that. But then
Dirge? No, god damn it. Hold on. We got to find it. It's going to bug me. And also, I saw his picture on IMDb. It's Sturge.
Sturge.
He looks okay. like in his IMDb picture, he's mm-hmm. like clean cut, his slicked back hair. He looks wildly different than he did in this show.
But yeah, like when Sturge and Ali like go through the change and everybody so quick was like, give me the blood, you know, like I have to take the communion and I have to go because this is a miracle. That terrified the shit out of me how quickly everybody was just so willing to accept it.
Yeah, sure. It kind of felt like a commentary on like Jonestown and like that,
yeah.
That type of
cult-like
thinking. Yeah. But actually, so I do want to talk about that scene, the end of episode 6, once they actually have the midnight mass.
Mm-hmm.
So that scene specifically is why I have never recommended this to you, Micah, because watching the show, it's like, oh yeah, I could see Micah enjoying this. There's really great character building. There's some really great acting. There's some really great, like, visually directing. But that scene, it's like, no, this is 100% a no go because I mean, it's like, literally, they just start tearing apart people in a church, and it's visually fucking striking. I mean,
yeah,
it's, I agree. I think it's a terrifying scene. My son was I made sure Dean was asleep and napping.
You were gonna say Dean was terrified.
No, oh, yeah, no. I made sure to get Dean down for a nap before I got to that part of the episode.
Yeah,
because I was like, if he's not asleep by the time it gets to that, I'm going to have to turn it off because I knew how, like,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
I made sure I rewatched it when no one was home.
Yeah,
sure.
So Micah, your thoughts on that scene. Did you hate it 100%?
Did I?
Cause I know
it,
you don't love blood and gore.
I'm not a fan.
And also the fact that it's in like this church, you know what I mean? It's basically everything. It's like the antithesis to stuff that I think you would like.
So the thing that jumped out to me about it was like it, I don't know, on the outside, maybe it's because I wasn't in the church about to be eaten by demons or vampires. I don't know.
If I had a dollar for every time I said that.
Yeah. To me, I just kept thinking like, how are these people feeling like, this is a godly thing, or this is a holy thing. Another thing about so something that I thought was interesting and actually kind of a unique twist on the scripture itself, because Father Paul does say that when the angels appeared in the scripture, they would tell the people, be not afraid. And that's true. Like anytime, like when Gabriel shows up to Mary, he does say, "Be not afraid, I'm of the Lord." Right, but it's not because he looked like a demon and was visually scary.
Yeah, no, that is another thing. When you watch this, it's like, how are you all not running away immediately when that thing walks in? So, like, that's clearly not from God. Right. That is clearly a demon from hell.
So, yeah, that's kind of where I was with it. I'm like, I find it hard to believe that if the immediate response is fear and terror, then why would people just be like, it's fear, like I'm terrified, but yeah, sure, let's go ahead and do it. That to me seemed like there was a little bit of a disconnect as far as the characters. But
as far as the bloodbath though, that's more so what I'm interested in. When shit starts going crazy and blood's flying everywhere,
how do you
they're attacking
feel
people.
About the blood.
You know, it reminds
did you
me
hate that it, mostly what I'm asking is, did you hate that scene as much as I think you would have?
Well, I wasn't a fan by any means, but I think it didn't bother me as much as probably I was expecting it to.
Okay.
I was expecting it to, like...
Did you kind of feel like they got what they deserved because their dumbasses didn't run out immediately?
I mean, there is that. Like, what? There is that, yeah. But, I don't know, maybe because when we were talking about this ahead of time, Thor was like, there's something you're not going to like. There's like a part that you're not going to like.
I feel like me and Mike saw each other last night. That disclaimer has to be put out there.
What I said was, Michael was like, I have thoughts. And he had not finished it. He was on episode 4, as was I. And I was like, but I remembered episode 6 is where it happens.
Yep.
So I was like, just wait till episode 6. You'll really have some thoughts.
Yeah. And, Bolton and I, in our talking about this too, I think Bolton had warned me a little bit, maybe not specifically about episode 6, but I think that Bolton even told me there's like one thing that's going to get you in this.
Well, I'm pretty sure I've said this before. So like, I can't say that I have a lot of religious friends, but like if I do have one, it's definitely you.
Sure.
Like if I were to ever need like guidance from any of my friends, you would be the one that I would come to because you're the one that I associate with that the most. So anytime that there's anything that's even remotely like anti-Christian or sacrilegious or anything like that, I'm like, I'm not sure how Micah's going to take this.
I thought you were going to say, Micah's got to watch this.
I mean, you should. But. Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, it's a show, right? Like, I'm not offended by the fact that the show exists or what they're doing. I think overall it was a good show. Honestly. I think, again, all of the technical things about the show are really, really well done. It's just hard for me to turn off that part of my brain and just, like, accept it. Without thinking critically about it.
Well, and I appreciate it too, because you brought like you bring like a different perspective to it, which makes me look at it differently too, and like appreciate things differently. So yeah. I think it's a positive thing, honestly.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Like, sure. Yeah, I hope that I'm not coming like across too much like a Catholic nun, but
no.
You are not Bev Keane. You are fine.
Okay, good. Am I that lady in the grocery store from The Mist?
Oh, Mother Carmody.
I hope not.
Oh, I hate her. To me, they're on like the same level.
Yeah.
I hate them both, but they're both so
same,
good.
Yeah, it's the same character. Yeah, did you see that?
No, I don't think so.
You've never seen The Mist? Oh, Thor.
I don't think so.
It's a Stephen King movie with Thomas Jane. It's pretty solid.
Okay. Honestly.
Thomas Jane.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
Speaking of Bev, I love that the last image we get of her in this show is that she's basically just digging to bury her head in the sand.
Yeah. Like, what a bitch. All right? You're so pompous through the whole thing. There was some satisfaction, right?
Oh, there's some satisfaction.
Yeah. Of seeing her, like, totally just I don't know, succumb to fear at the end of all of it.
Yeah. Honestly, for me, like, her religion is not anything that upsets me. It's just her, the fact that she's like the ultra Karen. She's mega Karen. You know what I mean? Like, she's just, she poisoned a dog. She's so terrible. Like, she is the worst villain.
She also complained about the color of the priest's robes.
Yeah. She is an incredible villain.
She hated Sheriff so much.
Yeah. Yeah, when does this take place? Like, what time period is this?
Yeah, I would say current, because it's definitely post 9/11 because I wasn't sure if it was diatribe.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was like 2004, 2005.
I mean, this came out in 2011 or 2021, so mm-hmm. I just kind of took it as 2021. Day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Oh, they do have smartphones too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's at least 2010s. Because I think the iPhone came out around that time. So, yeah, I was just thinking that maybe she would have that feeling because it's not too far after 9/11, but to justify that thought process. Yeah, I'm not saying that that's, like, the right thing to do.
Well, no, and I like when Sheriff had his diatribe about, like, how he ended up there.
Sure.
Because he said one thing. And, like, he just got pushed back onto the streets. And, you know, his whole career was basically ruined by one thing post 9/11 because of the color of his skin. And I think Bev not liking him just kind of echoes that fear.
Sure.
Yeah. They're trapped on an island. They're not as up to date and modern as everyone else. Like, so, like, that Islamophobia is, like, still for them is, like, still real. And also, she's just a bad person. You know, she's meant to. So it's like, yeah, she kills dogs. She's racist. She's pious and thinks she's better than everybody. And she's an asshole. You know what I mean? Like, everything about her is meant to be.
Yeah. I mean, she's terrible. Don't want to like.
And I mean,
the
it's effective storytelling. Honestly, I looked at a picture of her not as Bev Keane. Pretty hot lady, honestly.
She is one of Flanagan's regulars. She appears in a lot of his other stuff. She was in House of Usher. She was in Midnight
Club. Who was she in House of Usher? I know Aaron was in House of Usher.
She was the one daughter. Was it Goldbug? She was with the husband who she liked watching with other women.
Okay. Because I know Aaron was in House of Usher. She's like the...
That's Flanagan's wife, so she's going to appear in anything he does.
Yeah. She's also like... You ever do this where you're like watching a show and you're like, I don't know this actress. Let me IMDb her name real quick. And then Google whatever her name is, naked. Like, just immediately. Any nude scenes? Nope. Okay, I'm alone in that. All right.
All the time, Thor. All the
Definitely.
Time.
What do you think the internet's for?
You know what else? Okay, this might be my biggest gripe with the movie or the show. The biggest thing that I didn't like.
No nudity?
Yes. Where's the vampire balls?
Aaron's all sad. I want to see her naked too. I want to see her naked and sad and crying. I'm sorry, go on.
The thing that got me the most was the whole, like, congregation of the church. They could sing really well.
Dude, oh yeah, soundtrack.
Okay. They could sing really, really well.
I love the whole.
As you were saying it, I realized he's saying what he doesn't like about this. Yeah. So go on. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say I love the whole part at the end of the show when they basically have all accepted their fate and they're singing like as the sun's coming up.
I
thought that part was beautiful.
Oh, I really actually hated that part.
I think you would.
I really did.
There's no happiness in your world.
But these people are walking around and I'm like, they sing so good. And if you've spent any time in one of those old churches, all right, nobody's singing
just,
in tune.
Just old men hollering it out.
Everybody's singing off key. And that's kind of the beauty of it, all right, if you're in there. But they were singing too nice. They were singing too beautifully.
Yeah, they were the fucking tabernacle choir. Yeah,
they were doing
yeah.
great. All right, like so to your point, Thor, the soundtrack, I really like the soundtrack, but I like, not that I just like pull it up on Spotify and listen to old hymns, because I'm not there, but I do often like a lot of those, like the sound of a lot of those songs.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's such a it's a little bit easy, I'll admit, because I think those types of songs, it naturally has, it can kind of fit into like a very like emotional spot, and it can very easily, based on what you're actually watching, it can feel very eerie. It's almost like a hack, like using that kind of, like, I think when you're telling a story like this, where it's very heavily based in the Catholic, like Catholic religion, and kind of like diving into that stuff, it is, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, if you use that type of music, this like chamber music, the gospel, just singing, no instruments. I think it's very easy to kind of like tell a creepy story with that music.
There's the dichotomy.
And then there's also some like really beautiful uplifting parts that use the same music too.
Sure.
Which I find very interesting.
Yeah.
But I love the soundtrack in this.
Yeah, I think the soundtrack overall was good. Overall, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Rating time?
Yeah, it's time to rate. Yeah, I mean, I could complain longer, but...
All right, Zach, so I'm going to start with you because... So I want you to rate this on as far as like, because you're a huge horror fan. So just in the world of all horror, all movies and shows, we're going to do it on a scale of 1 to... How many people do you think lived in this town?
It was only like 1 or 200. It wasn't a lot.
All right,
I think they say at the beginning of the show, actually, but
we'll go 100. So on a scale of 1 to 100, people eaten by vampires. how would you rate this?
Is this a golf score scenario or
nope? More okay. People eating, the better.
The oh, more people eating, the better.
Fill your belly. You're gonna fill your belly.
Yeah.
So I will say that when horror season comes around, shows or like miniseries are not ones that I usually rewatch. It could just be because of the time frame or the timeline where I could watch, you know, 2 or 3 movies in the amount of time it would take me to, you know, watch a series.
Yeah.
But this is one I feel like I could like rewatch every year, like in my schedule. Like I feel that I could watch it every Easter, Micah, just because.
No,
it's such a great Easter story.
It really is.
Not at all. Jeez.
Zombie but Jesus not, would appreciate this.
I really like this. And like I said, there was moments that, you know, actually scared me, which is a rarity. So that's already going to bump up the score. I'd say like a solid 85 eaten people.
Okay, cool. I think I'm going to go. And Mike, we don't have to rate it on that scale, obviously. I mean, we're going to rate it on the same scale, but we're just going to, you know, as anything else we would. I think I'm going to, okay. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah. Not comparing it to
other horror stuff. Yeah. I think I'm going to give it like a, gosh, I really like this show. Like a 90.
Yeah.
90. Yeah. 90 people. I like it a lot. Like I said, all my criticisms were like small stuff, like the makeup or just a small plot hole, which could be explained by any number of things.
Sure.
So I love the acting. I love all the dialogue and these long monologues. We didn't even talk about when Lisa confronts fucking Joe. What's his name?
Oh, Joe Colley.
It's fucking good scene. It's so brutal. It's a good scene. And like him almost like kind of like crying and choking the words out as she's confronting him and saying,
cry.
I forgive you. It's like, gosh, man, I loved that guy. I was so sad when he died so early. I love Joe Colley.
He was a good character.
Such a great character. I love all the characters. Visually, it's incredible. I think the music's awesome. I think for anybody, this is a great watch for a spooky season or Easter, you know, whatever your jam is. I'm gonna go
for the spooky Easter season.
So I'm gonna go 90 out of 100.
Yeah. Hey, every holiday needs a good horror movie based off.
I'm feasting on 90 yokels on a fucking washed up island.
Is there a holiday that doesn't have a horror movie based off of it?
I don't think so.
I was
going to
say,
not anymore.
Thanksgiving does, Christmas does, Easter does.
Valentine's Day definitely does.
Valentine's definitely does.
St. Patrick's Day does.
No, I guess Mother is kind of, whole metaphor for like global warming.
Fourth of July does.
Wait.
Oh, what, you know what? There definitely is, because Hulu did this thing where it was like 12. Hulu did, it was like Huluween, and it lasted a whole year. And so literally they made a movie every month, a horror movie every single month, and each one was based around whatever, like, that time period.
So, oh,
literally there is one for every month. Or do you want to watch the whole 12 Huluween movies?
Absolutely. Not.
No, I watched a couple of them. I didn't care.
I was going to say they weren't good,
they
but,
stink.
They do exist. But they do exist.
What about Hanukkah? Do we have a horror Hanukkah movie?
There's a comedy Hanukkah movie.
Basically the same thing.
It was a Comedy Central movie. It's called it was like Shaft, like that type of. It was
okay,
it was like yeah, kind of like Black Dynamite, but okay. Jews.
I threw that shit
like
before
that
I walked in the room.
Same thing where it's like,
that's hilarious.
Gosh, okay. What was that called?
Hanukkah horror movie. That's, oh, there's one called Hanukkah Uncut.
I wonder what that's about.
Okay, can I just say,
did you like teeth? You'll probably like this.
Okay, so on Google, when you search Hanukkah horror movie, that's the first thing that comes up. Then see also Texas Chainsaw Massacre, House of a Thousand Corpses, Blair Witch Project.
You know, those classic, those Hanukkah
those
classics.
Classic Hanukkah movies.
Jeez. Yeah, that's the only one that I am. But, you know, Hanukkah Uncut, that sounds great.
That's what we're watching this year for Hanukkah.
Jeez. How many nights of Hanukkah are there?
Eight. There's eight crazy nights.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Do we do a Hanukkah season of
I would watch eight crazy
movies.
We just watch eight crazy nights eight times.
Eight times.
Just watch eight Adam Sandler movies.
That might be kind of fun. Okay. All right. We'll put that in our back pocket. I guess I should rate this. I'm going to give it a 7D.
Okay. That's
okay.
Better
that's
than I expected.
Yeah, that's higher.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go 70 out of 100. Again, like, everything technical about this series I thought was really, really well done. My only gripe came from my knowledge and, like, background that is external to the film or external to the show. So that's enough to take 30 points away, I guess.
Yeah, but that seems fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I can't really complain about the quality of the series. It was really, really well done. So if you're not a fan of horror, don't watch it. If you're
a fan of Easter, watch it.
If you're no, I don't. That's not a correlation at all that should be made about this series. But
you know, that's my only complaint. There's no Easter bunnies in this. There's no little bunnies hopping around.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure they'd have been killed by by the ultra.
Oh yeah,
Karen.
He definitely ate some bunnies. Okay, never mind.
Probably.
Probably.
Yeah. But yeah, I think all in all, this was pretty solid. There were episodes where I watched the entire episode and I'm like, that was a pretty good episode. That, like, there was a lot of that actually for me. So it just near the end, it started becoming less and less. Maybe it started becoming less and less believable, just based on where I'm coming from, and that's probably my gripe with it. Because as the show started, I'm like, I think that this is a good portrayal with some characters, as far as like people who are religious figures or people who have a religious background and they're not automatically scummy people. That's nice to see. And I guess even what's her nuts, Erin, is that her name?
Uh huh. Yeah.
I would say that she was probably in that category through and through, like through the end of it.
Yeah.
So that's nice to see, I guess. But yeah, 7D out of 100.
Okay, cool.
So that's where I'm going with it.
Nice. I dig it. What are we getting into next week?
Next week. Well, real quick, I want to know what the people think about this. If you are from the New England area, you gotta let us know. Is there an island that mysteriously just set ablaze on Easter one year? Is this a true story? Is this like a Fargo thing? Where they just changed all the names, but out of respect for the dead, everybody else is, you know, the same. Also, if you're in the Damascus area and you lost a priest, let us know. Yeah, you can find us on a multitude of outlets. We are on Spotify. We're on Instagram. We are on any streaming service where you can find a podcast. You can even send us an email to recommend something to us. It's getrecpod@gmail.com. Thor, how do we spell that? I'm going to spell it bad.
GitRecPod@gmail.com.
All right. There we go. Yeah, for next week, we're going to take a recommendation from my dearly beloved wife.
Oh, yay.
She has given us the recommendation of the musical artist Chapel Roan.
Cool.
Yep.
I'm familiar with the name.
I was not at all, and I heard one song that she played me, and I thought, okay, I don't know how we're going to feel about it, but let's listen to it. She's evidently exploded on the scene recently.
Yeah, so I recently got Sirius, so I don't listen to regular radio anymore because okay. I'm always on Sirius just flipping through multiple things. So randomly, like, the VMAs were just recently.
Okay.
And her name kept popping up a lot on there, and I was like, who the hell is this? Well, earlier this week, my car was in the shop, so I had to borrow my dad's, which does not have satellite radio, and it draws in one station, which is a pop station.
Your father's clearly a peasant.
it's like a 94 Sonata.
But, good dad. That's a good dad.
Yeah. But
good dads fix their own cars, and they don't buy new ones.
I'm driving to work, and they're like, oh, and here's the most recent one from Chapel Roan. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I finally get to hear what this chick sounds like. Nope.
Was it Pink Pony Club?
Pink Pony Club. I couldn't even tell you. It was awful. I hated it. But then they played like Sabrina Carpenter too after that, because that was another name that just like recently exploded. And yeah. I was like, she's just as bad. I can't stand any of this.
We're old men now. We can't listen to the radio anymore.
This is why I pay for Sirius.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't listen to the radio
anymore. Yeah, I've been an old man since I was like 15, so. Yeah.
Yep. That's true.
This isn't David Bowie.
It's not Bowie. It's not the Beatles. What am I doing listening to
it? It's not Crass. Jeez. Yeah, so next week, crew, we're going to be listening to Chapel Roan's album. I think it's called The Rise and Fall of a Tennessee Princess.
Cool.
Or something like that. It's The Rise and Fall of a Midwestern princess. The rise and fall of a lady who is a princess.
From Central America region.
And my bet is that I will think Crass is better than it.
Oh, that's a low bar for me. Chapel, I'm going to find it right now. Chapel Roan, The Rise and Fall. The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess. That's the name of it.
You were close.
Yeah, Shouldn't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
I'm judging an album by its name. I don't have a ton of hope for this.
I judge things by their cover all the time. All the time I do. So, whatever, Thor. That's fine. You can judge it by its name. That's fine. So, yeah. Next week, The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess. Chapel Roan's album from 2023. Listen to it. Find it on YouTube. Go get a Sirius radio subscription so that you can listen to it there. Or you can probably just listen to it on the radio, because I think it's popular music. So, that's what we're getting into. Until next time, folks.
Bolton, thank you for being here.
Yep, thanks for having me on for spooky season.
It was such a long spooky season for us, too. Yeah, no, I'm very happy that you were able to join us, dude.
And I was just saving you because you got it wrong.
As always, folks.
Until next time.
You get wrecked out there.
And stay wrecked, all you Christians.
You Christians.
Christians.
I actually did like that the Muslims were praying to the east at the very end with the
when the sun was coming up?
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch. Yeah.
They got the scripture wrong, but they got the Muslims praying right. Oh, so 50-50.
That Netflix agenda.